Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. And today's episode is with Jess Williamson. Now, before I get to that, I want to update you on some podcast goings on, I guess. Upcoming interviews. Last week, I interviewed Bethany Cosentino, formerly of Best Coast. They're on indefinite hiatus. That was a great interview. I talked to her a few times before, but this will be the first podcast episode. Deer Tick is coming up. Josh Ritter, Morgan Kibbe, and Emil Mosseri. Those are all, and I'll probably be doing more, but obviously, but those are the ones I have lined up. So those are just the next episodes you'll be hearing. On a music-related note, I saw Paramore this weekend, and what an amazing show. Hayley Williams, I mean, that stage presence, that voice, everything about it, incredible show. Yeah, can't say enough good things about it. I mean, she is what an incredible front person, just dynamic and energetic and just fantastic. But hey, I don't want to overlook Block Party and Genesis Owusu, who opened, and two great acts as well. I'm a big fan of both of them anyway. So that was a fun night at Capital One Arena in DC. So anyway, back to Jess Williamson, new album out called Time Ain't Accidental. And I love it. It is great. You may know her also, her project with Katie Crutchfield of Waxahachie called The Plains. And that was, I think, within the past year, that was a great album. But this new album, Time Ain't Accidental, is fantastic. This quote probably sums it up. She told me this during the interview. I'm pretty much always thinking about lyrics every day, every second of every day of my life. And there's such incredible energy she brings to this podcast. We had a blast. She asked me questions even, and we talked about literature and the influence literature has on her writing and her process, and just the energy she brings. I really enjoy talking to her. I'm a fan of the music anyway, but I hope the energy I'm certain will come through in this conversation with her. So check it out. Again, the album is called Time Ain't Accidental. That is out, and I believe it comes out this week. I'm sorry, but it is great. So pick it up. And with that, my interview with Jess Williamson. Listen, thanks again. I'm a big fan.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I always start with you as far as songwriting songwriting as first. Are you a write every day type of person or a write kind of when the mood strikes? Because some songwriters tell me it's important to, in some fashion, to write every day, even if it's bad. Others say, if you know, it's better just to kind of wait until you've got something to say.
I go in phases with it. I'm pretty much always thinking about lyrics every day of my life. And I have in my iPhone this really long notes folder that I'll just jot an idea down, just something, you know, and I just keep it in that notes folder. So that's sort of a constant. It's always on my mind. But when I am really in the mode of writing, and when I get my best writing done, is when I have a schedule and I carve out the time for it and I do it every day and I force myself to sit at the guitar or sit at the keyboard and write. And that's usually when I'm in a period of like, it's time to get the next record written. And it's usually like a dedicated period where I'm like, we're getting serious right now. We're going to like write these songs and finish this record.
Okay. So there's a couple of questions I always ask songwriters. One is about that notes folder, because that's pretty common, right? That notes just filled. And all I can think about is the anxiety I would feel, because most of them have no organization to that folder. It's like just write everything down. And then it's frantically looking for that thing that you wrote a couple months ago. So are they organized at all, those ideas?
No. No. The only like thing about it that's organized is it's titled with two emojis that will remain anonymous. But those two emojis, I think, are giving me like kind of the framework for maybe the title of my next record. And so I actually have that with the notes folders, like I had a whole notes folder just for Time Ain't Accidental. And now that's done. So I started like a new one for the new record, but okay, that's about as organized as it gets. It's just that they're new songs. It's like a new phase.
So each folder gets its emoji?
The emojis might be new, actually. This might be a new thing. I might have had none for Time Ain't Accidental. I can't remember. I should probably go look.
So what about, though, if you're walking or driving or whatever, or, you know, you're somewhere and some lyrical idea strikes you?
You throw it in the notes.
That lyric, so some lyric strikes you, does that go in a certain album folder? Is there just like a random place, like, I'll find a space for this somewhere. I just don't know where it's going to go now. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know where it's going to go now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when I get in the zone and I start writing, the lyrics tell me where they want to go. You know, actually last night, thank the Lord, I started writing a song. I was getting a little scared, Ben, because it's kind of been a little while, because I, like, you know, last year was like, I was pretty busy with making the record, and then I released the Plains record, right, and we had a whole campaign and we were on tour. And so 2022, I didn't write a song. I was just so in like a different part of my brain, and I was starting to get a little bit freaked out by that. And it's because I've been doing the notes folder, but I just haven't done the like, just sit with the instrument thing, you know, that like, it kind of feels like channeling something from somewhere else. And last night, praise the Lord, I started writing a new song, and I went to that notes folder. And like, kind of the beauty is a couple of the things that were in there are creeping their way into this new song. But what usually happens is those ones that are already in there, they're really just the jumping off point for all kinds of new stuff. It's really just like pulling from that. I'll get maybe one line, and then like, the rest of the song is born once there's kind of the container of the song around it. And then I should say, once like the songs are actually being written, I get very organized as far as like, I have my journal, I write everything down, I write out all the chords, I make the voice memo, because it's crazy how quickly you can forget a song that you're writing if you don't like get it down kind of right away.
It's funny because I also hear people who don't write it down because they figure if it's not worth it, you're probably going to forget it anyway. So, yeah, it's kind of the both ways. So, so when that song came to you last night, was it just spontaneous or was it something you heard? Was it like, I'm curious where the genesis of those songs, is it you're watching TV, you're reading a book, or was it out of nowhere something happened?
Well, I was practicing last night because I'm getting ready to go on tour. And yeah. So, it's this funny experience of like, not only do I practice with my band, but I also have to practice alone to memorize my own songs. Like, because I, you know, you write it and you record it and then you put it down for a year, you know? So I'm kind of like relearning my own songs. And so I was just sitting actually right here and playing guitar. And it was just this inspired moment of like having fun singing, having fun playing, like the reverb sounded really nice. And sometimes just moving the capo around on the guitar helps me unlock like a different sound in my voice and a different sound to the chords, obviously, just changing the key. And I just like threw the capo on the sixth fret and started playing some chords and felt inspired and kind of just like blurted out a line and started singing it. And then that turned into something completely unrelated to what that line was. And then the song kind of took itself to this whole other direction. And then we bust out the notes folder, you know, and like I wrote a verse and a chorus to something, you know, so it's still like in this nascent phase of gestating into what it wants to be. And like knowing me, this could turn into something totally different, but just having those bones starting to come together is really exciting.
So did you finish the song or no?
No.
Okay. So then when will you know when to go back to it?
Probably today.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably today. And the thing is, I'm really looking forward to dedicating a chunk of time to getting back into my workflow of every day at a certain time. Usually for me, it's in the morning, actually. It's like, I just treat it like a job. I get up, I make my coffee, I do morning pages, I take my dog out, I don't look at the email, I don't look at the phone, and I go right to my instrument and my notebooks and try to stay in that space as long as I can. Because I also find too that coming out of a dream state and not interacting with the world and not letting all that stuff in helps me to just be really connected to something internal and maybe something higher too. You know, I hear a lot of songwriters talk about, it feels like you're kind of catching something that's outside of you, you know, and then like channeling it into this thing and you don't always know where it comes from. And I find that if I'm disciplined and I carve out the time to be receptive to that, I can catch it, you know, easier. If I'm like, almost like we have a deal where I'm like, I'm going to show up at the same time every day. So I'll be here and you can come, you know, I'll be available for that. And so usually like if I'm on the email and I'm on the phone and like the stuff of life is happening, or I like meet a friend, it's like, I might not catch the songs. I might not be aware as much. It might only be that snippet of a lyric that goes in the voice memo. And, you know, that's okay. Like right now it's a busy time. And it's so funny as an artist, it's like, there's so many different things that you do and they're all such different parts of your brain, you know? And so it's just funny. I'm sort of like looking at the calendar being like, when can I carve out like 2 weeks of just kind of like solo writing time?
So the morning pages. So yeah. How does that work exactly? Is that a certain number of pages or words, or I've heard a lot of songwriters say that, but I'm not sure how that exactly works. So how does that ritual go?
Well, it comes from this book called The Artist's Way.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, I got the book. I fully intended on reading the book and I only got about as far as the morning pages part, which is right at the beginning. And then I kind of like stopped reading the book. So I don't even know what all's in there, but this morning pages thing is in there and it's changed my life. And I've been doing it for like 6 years. And basically the practice is every morning, first thing, you know, after coffee, obviously, like you get up, you make your coffee and a journal of your choosing, size and shape of your choosing. And you just free write for 3 full pages.
Okay.
And the idea is that you don't go back and read it. It's not for people to read. It's not a diary. It's not a to-do list. It's just dumping your thoughts onto a page. And I found it to be really grounding for me. I feel very different on the days that I don't do it. Mm. I like feel a very palpable difference.
Do those ever lead to song ideas?
Rarely. I think there have been times where I've been writing and I wrote something down and I underlined it and then maybe it ended up in a song, but not usually.
So for me, see, I think the ritual is super important. I mean, I'm a prose writer, not a songwriter, but for me, it's all about, for me, the place is important. Like I write here, but I revise in that chair behind me. Or if it's not happening, I go downstairs to another room. Like I'm very big on getting the hell away from the space I'm in because I feel like I need that change of environment. And it's amazing what that does to me. And I just think that's so important to know what works. So it sounds like that's important to you as well. So is there a favorite place that you like to write or does that not matter?
I like to write right here in my house. I need a lot of solitude and I live alone in this house. Usually my boyfriend's sometimes here and if anyone's around, I can't really do it. I need to be alone. And I also need kind of a lot of undisturbed, unstructured time because you don't always quite know when it's going to hit you. And yeah, I love to write in this little house. I have all my stuff here. I have my keyboard, I have my guitar, I have my microphone, I have my recording gear, I have my Omnicord. And my dog and my coffee. If you can't tell, coffee is a big part of my life. And I, you know, it's my little cave where no one can find me. And it's, you know, there's a lyric in a song on my new record, the song called I'd Come to Your Call. And it talks about this house. And it, the line says, I live alone in my temple to the muse. And I feel that way about this house. I have all my books, I have all my magical crystals, and it's just my place to like really burrow inward and channel those things.
And does the room matter or no? It's just,
well, my house is kind of one room. Like it's okay. Kind of one big room with a lofted bed zone, which I think is very important that the bed is away. Because I do think there's something important about having the sleep space be its own separate zone that you don't bring work into. So normally here at my table next to the window is where I write.
And can you write for long stretches? Like I'm good for about an hour before I have to get up and walk around for like 5 minutes.
I'm the same. Yeah, it's funny. A friend of mine told me that she has this practice where she sets a timer for 2 hours. And it's to keep her disciplined to work on writing for 2 hours a day. And she'll pause it when she like gets up to do something else. But it's like almost like clocking in and clocking out. And it's so funny because when she told me that, I was like, that doesn't sound like that long, you know? And then I got a timer and I started doing it. And I realized actually about 2 hours might be all I have in a day of like that kind of focus. You know, 2 concentrated, focused hours can be really enough. And like to be able to keep up with it like that with the timer thing is kind of helpful for me. It's encouraging to be like, I did the 2 hours. And it can also be a little bit like just keeping me in check. Like, because it's easy for me to think that I'm working on something all day, but I'm actually very easily distracted.
Do you ever get nervous though? Because it sounds like you and I have that same idea that the ritual and the place is important. Does it ever make you nervous to think that you couldn't get as much done if you were somewhere else? Like I sometimes I use it as an excuse, like, well, I'm not in my space, so I'm not going to write now. Do you know what I'm saying? Does it ever make you nervous like that that it would be, you'd be less effective if you were, you know, on tour or something like that? Because you're so attached to that space.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. Like I have friends that tell me they can write on tour and they'll just have like an acoustic in the hotel room and stuff. And I'm like, I've never done that. But I have done like self-imposed writing residencies where I like go to a place and I take all my stuff and it's like this intentional time for a number of weeks or however long. And I can do that. Like, and I love that. And actually the change of pace is nice. So I think for me, it's about more about just having like my stuff, like my gear and the solitude, really. But I really aspire to be one of those people that can like write in a hotel room. I think there's something very romantic about that.
And I think we play tricks on ourselves because I've had people tell me that they, to lessen the anxiety around the process, they'll deliberately write lyrics on the backs of like utility bills or envelopes, because if you can do it in a place, if you write it there, it's not as serious. But if you have your fancy notebook and your fancy journal, it makes it so precious. But not having that, writing it on a scrap or something is like, oh, it's not a big deal. But I don't know. Do you, I guess, yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I just do the notes thing. I just do the iPhone note, you know, where it's like some stuff in there is so bad. I would be so embarrassed if someone read it, you know, like some of it's so bad, but it's like, I don't judge that in the moment. I just put it in there and it's like, we can judge it later or zhuzh it up later, you know, but I think it's important to just get all the ideas down.
Now, are you, when it comes to the lyrics, are you ever a pen and paper person or strictly phone computer person?
Yes, I'm like 100% pen and paper person.
Oh, you are?
When I'm like actually writing, like it's got to be pen on paper for sure.
And I mean, listen, songwriters are incredibly possessive about color of ink type of pen. I could do a whole blog just on that. It's amazing. And it's a confidence thing again. I mean, I've got my pens too, but does color... The answers I hear are crazy.
That's so funny.
Does color of ink, type of pen, type of paper, any of that matter?
I like the pens that are like, I have one right here. I don't like ballpoint pens, like the kind that you always get for free or like that they have at restaurants, you know. I have some because I got them for free or something. But it's always like hard to use those, but they're usually around if I lose my good pens. And my good pens, like I like to go to like Walgreens or CVS and buy like the good ones, like they're, what do you call it? Like not a gel.
Yeah.
Not a gel, but like, what do you have right there?
This is
those are good ones.
Energel liquid gel ink.
Those are good. Those are good, but they're kind of heavy for me. I feel like sometimes they're kind of messy.
Yeah. And does color of paper, type of paper matter?
Not really. I mean, I like these kind of notebooks, like with the little strappy thing where you can close them, you know, like the classic kind of moleskin style. I do kind of think about color. I mean, actually, this is my notebook for the next record. And I chose brown because I think that my next record is going to feel really grounded and earthly. And so when I was choosing the notebook, I chose brown.
That's so interesting.
I actually do think about color kind of with all the records. Now that you bring that up.
Yeah. Something you said earlier about, I think that song that you started last night, Hemingway once said that he'd always end writing for the night when he knew he had something to say, because he was terrified of waking up the next day with an empty tank. So he'd stop when he had something great. So he knew that when he started the next day, he could start writing immediately. Cool. Yeah. Isn't that pretty cool? I don't know if I could do that. I wouldn't have the discipline to do that. But he always would say, you know, stop writing when you have something to say so that the next day you've always got something to start with.
That's really good. It reminds me of one of my favorite Willie Nelson lyrics, which is from the song Shotgun Willie. And he says, you can't make a record if you ain't got nothing to say.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes I am judgmental of songwriters that tell me they can't think of any lyrics. Because when I hear that, I think, well, you can't make a record if you ain't got nothing to say.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you better go have some experiences then and get inspired.
And so that's a kind of a segue to what I was going to ask you anyway. And that is, a lot of songwriters tell me they get great ideas. Now I'm going to read you a quote actually by Agatha Christie, the novelist. She said, cool. I've got all these quotes by writers that I like to tell songwriters.
I have one that I want to tell you, by the way.
Okay. Hold on. Let me tell you this one first. The best time to plan a book is when you're doing the dishes. And that, I think I hear so often that people get song ideas doing mundane activities, gardening, chopping vegetables, vacuuming, cleaning, something about doing an activity that requires no conscious brain power that lets the subconscious come up. And so a lot of songwriters tell me to get great ideas when they're doing, I mean, I've heard, you know, swimming, any of that stuff, that's movement, that's something else. But I'm curious how often you get song ideas during those mundane activities that require no brain power.
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think the one for me is probably driving.
Yeah.
Which should probably require brain power, but it does become kind of second nature. And like we were talking about, I do a lot of long drives, you know? Yeah. And so it's usually a contemplative time, just thinking about life. And so I'll get little snippets there. But yeah, now that you mention it, honestly, it could be anywhere. It could be the grocery store. It could be just walking my dog to get a coffee. And I have a little snippet of an idea come through. I mean, what about you? Does that happen for you?
Yes, it does. I mean, I use movement as a deliberate way. When I feel like I'm in a rut, when things aren't happening, I absolutely go for a walk, or I'll go for a run. I mean, I don't go for a run like 5 times a day, but I do find that the worst thing for me to do is to sit here.
Like bang your head against the wall.
Yeah.
Totally.
I think it's different though. For songwriters, I hear people tell me that the song ideas almost track with the rhythm of the thing that they're doing sometimes. It's crazy that the things I've heard, but for me, it's, I deliberately use movement. It's if I know it's not happening, I'll get up. But I do find that I'm trying to think where those great ideas come. I do think driving, but I think it's when I'm, I think when I mean, I try to run every day, exercise, and I think I always get great, you know, what I think are great ideas, good ideas, whatever, as I'm running. So that's, I think exercise is where I get the most, but how about you? Does that happen? Like, how about movement in general, besides driving? You said walking the dog. I hear, gosh, I interviewed Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls. This was a couple weeks ago. And she said, dog walking, great time for song ideas.
Oh, that's so cool. You know, I love, like, living in LA, I'm really close to a lot of beautiful hikes, and that's a time where I'm alone, but I'm in nature and there's kind of people around and I'm with my dog. I'll get good ideas then. But you know what's funny is sometimes some of my best lyrics were actually misheard lyrics from other people. Like, I've had to go to friends and be like, hey, does your song say this? And they're like, no, not at all. I'm like, great. Okay, it's my song now. You know, like sometimes like just mishearing something is where I'll get an idea even.
But not movement necessarily, not like those kind of, you know, I guess when the brain is turned off kind of moment.
No, I don't, I mean, huh. I would love to say yes.
Yeah.
And I don't have an example. I mean, I run sometimes, like definitely am not thinking about songwriting. I'm like listening to rap music and like wondering like how far I've gone. I don't know. I mean,
all right. What's that quote that you were going to, you said you were going to give me a quote. What's the quote?
Well, actually it's very applicable to the question that you asked me. This is one of my favorite books. It's called Songwriters on Songwriting.
Yeah. I've got that somewhere. Yeah. It's downstairs.
Okay. And there is this quote in here from Leonard Cohen, and I love Leonard Cohen. He's maybe my favorite songwriter. And it says, if I knew where the good songs came from, I'd go there more often. It's a mysterious condition. It's much like the life of a Catholic nun. You're married to a mystery.
That's great. Yeah. And do you, but does that, doesn't that, I don't know. I'm not a songwriter, but I would, as if I was a songwriter, I would hear that and say, oh shit. Now that like, I don't want it to be a mystery. I want to know when it works for me. I don't know. Does that not, that's a great quote, but that doesn't cause you any anxiety.
What's your sign?
I'm a Gemini.
Oh, interesting.
What does that say about me?
I don't know. It wasn't what I expected you to say. Actually, I'm also like really bad at guessing people's signs too, but I think to me that quote is comforting because that's how it feels to me.
Yeah.
And this book, Songwriters on Songwriting, like a few of my favorite interviews in there all say the same thing, which is this idea that you're channeling something from outside of you.
Yeah.
And you don't always know, like there's not a formula. Like that person that you're talking about that has that like really formulaic 18-page document.
Yeah.
That's like a really different approach than I've ever taken. And that sounds like someone that's trying really hard to take the mystery out of it and have it be predictable. And I hope that works for that person. And I don't think that works for me really. Like the only thing that works is showing up consistently for the muse.
Yep.
And being available and receptive, and then knowing when to stop, and then having trusted collaborators, and knowing that I don't always have to do everything all by myself.
Yeah. Speaking of that, there was a study I read, this was a couple of years ago, where they, it was with Salvador Dali. And he has, there's this state, and I always forget it. I need to look at the name. There's a state of before you are, it's between wake and sleep. It's that, you know, it's that hazy thing where you're kind of like weird things in your mind. Well, anyway,
yeah.
Apparently that's a very fruitful time for creativity. So what he would do, and they've actually replicated this in the lab with creative types, but he would sit, there's a picture of him. He would sit in this incredibly uncomfortable chair with a skeleton key in his hand and his arm outstretched and with a saucer on the floor. When he would drift off, he would let go of the key, it would make a noise, and he'd start to paint.
Wow.
Because there was something about that, whatever the name of that state is, that apparently it's this, you're not asleep, you're not awake kind of thing, but that's incredibly, and I hear a lot of people tell me that those are that's when the lyrics come. I'm not talking like middle of the night, but when you're just kind of in that haze.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if that's ever happened to you, or maybe even when you're, you know, how often does that happen when you're in that kind of state when maybe those ideas come to you?
Wow, that's so cool. I have had the experience of dreaming a song or being in that place that you're talking about and having ideas, but I can't ever remember them.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I have heard of people sleeping with like a recorder next to them so they could try to capture those ideas. Actually, there's a Bill Callahan song about this very thing. Do you know Bill Callahan's music at all?
Yeah.
He has that song, I'd Walk Lakshaw.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, I dreamed the perfect song. And the lyrics were, I'd Walk Lakshaw, you know.
Right. There's a novel I read a couple of years ago. I can't remember what it's called, but the main character is a writer. And so it's a horrible idea, but the main character sleeps with a pencil wrapped around his finger. And so when he'd get an idea in the middle of the night, because he had a professor that would tell him that every second you lose, that idea is further and further disappear. So rather than waking up and fumbling for a pencil, you've got that pencil already strapped to your finger so that when you wake up in the middle of the night, it's ready to go.
Wow. Wow. And it just makes me think, like, I think as creative people, you have to really make it the center of your life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think about that person sleeping with a pencil connected to their finger. Like, are they sleeping next to anyone? Cause that's,
you know, it's what I mean? Idea, like, right? I know. It's a horrible idea. I mean, I would never, cause all you have to do is scratch your head, scratch your face in the middle of the night and you're blind.
Yeah.
So I want to read you another quote, and this is by E.L. Doctorow, the novelist. This is what the songwriters love. This is their favorite. And I'll repeat this. Writing is like driving at night. You can only see as far as the headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way.
Wow.
I'll read it again.
Really good.
I know. Isn't that good? Writing is like driving at night. You can only see as far as the headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way.
Oh my God. That's so good.
And that is me, absolutely, because I think the worst thing I can do is know what it's supposed to look like when I'm finished. I don't think I have any right knowing that. I don't think I have any right knowing how it's supposed to look. And I think the worst thing I can do is say, here's where I am, here's where I want to end up. So for me, that really rings true, because it's, let me start writing and see where that takes me.
Yeah.
So as a songwriter, what are your thoughts on that?
I love that. And I really relate, because it's so good to talk to you today after starting a new song last night. And all I know with this new song is that the seeds of melody have been planted. A little bit of structure is showing itself. There are some lyrics that I like. There are a lot of different places it could go. And it's okay to not know yet. It's still growing into what it's going to be.
And it's cool to think that we may get off this call and 10 minutes later, right? It may come to you, right? I mean, not that, and anytime it could happen.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
All right. Another one. This is Allen Ginsberg, the poet. To gain your own voice, you have to forget about having it heard.
Wow.
To gain your own voice, you have to forget about having it heard. So,
Yeah, it makes me think about like so many people that I know that are so talented, but I think maybe think a little too much about the getting it heard part, And then there's this desire for it to be perfect, and it's never right. going to be perfect. And so the fear seeps in, and nothing really ever gets finished because nothing's ever going to be perfect.
Yeah, it's the idea, right? I mean, there's a great essay by the novelist Anne Lamott, and it's Shitty First Drafts. And that's right. That's her firm belief. I believe that first draft has to be shitty rather than, and I like what Ginsberg says, because it's the more self-conscious we are about that voice, the harder it is to get it down there.
Yeah, I think you're so right. Like, I remember when I first started ever playing shows or putting out music, like I would never put out that music today, you know, like I've grown and changed and hopefully gotten better and gotten more comfortable singing and writing and stuff. But I think you have to be kind of comfortable, like growing up publicly in a way and like changing and evolving and being okay with like not being an expert from day one.
Yeah. And so about your lyrics, I was going to ask you this. Do you, are you a big heavy reviser of your lyrics?
It depends on the song. Like a song like Abilene, which I wrote for the Plains record, was one that I wrote in an afternoon. It just happened really fast and very little revisions. It just kind of like poured out of me. But a song like Hunter, which was the first single for my new record, those lyrics took longer for me. And I spent more time moving things around a little bit. So it just depends on the song.
Are you less likely to revise it if it pours out of you, though?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
it's almost like that. Like Abilene almost felt like it wrote itself or something. And it was like, okay.
Yeah, you almost feel deliberately like, I'm not going to touch that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think you mentioned books and you're being around your books. I've got my Read Banned Books t-shirt here that I got from Bitter Southerner, the journal.
Awesome.
And I don't know if you can see, I've got that's my Read Banned Books poster back there too. That's a Tennessee Williams. So my dissertation for my PhD is 20th century American theater, dramatic literature. So playwrights like so Tennessee cool. Williams and Eugene O'Neill, people like that. So anyway, what do you like to read? Who are your favorite authors? Are you a genre person, an author person, or what?
You know, I've kind of been on a really long nonfiction kick for a lot of years now. I'm currently obsessed with Manly P. Hall. Are you familiar with him?
No.
So Manly P. Hall wrote a book called The Secret Teachings of All Ages. It's actually behind me. Can you see it right there?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I finished it. It's like a thick Bible type book. It's like 800 pages.
Yeah.
And I finished it in February. And now I'm reading another Manly P. Hall collection of essays that is called The Secret History of America. And so it's about this country and sort of his thoughts on the reasons that we're here in America. I'm kind of like on a pretty big Manly P. Hall kick right now. I'm becoming a little bit of a Hall head and just pretty obsessed with his catalog. And I want to just like read everything he's ever written. I live a block away from this place in LA called the Philosophical Research Society, which he founded in the 20s. And it's a place that has his library of rare books. And he's really a person that, he's no longer living, but he wrote about all kinds of esoteric and occult and spiritual things. And I'm just deeply intrigued. And it feels like this deep well of knowledge that I'm like just treading water on the very, very top of. And like with each new thing that I read, I'm getting in a little bit deeper, but I feel like a student again. And I'm just sort of slowly going through his catalog right now. So I'm kind of just like in a Manly P. Hall moment.
So what got you into that moment in the first place, or the Manly P. Hall kick?
Well, I live by the Philosophical Research Society. Yeah. And so I would go there a lot, like before COVID, you know, go to events, poke around in the library. They have a really cool bookstore. And then it was closed for a while, and then it reopened. And so I started going again, started, you know, going to events and talks. And I went into the bookstore last summer, and it's so overwhelming to go into that bookstore because every single thing they have is something I want to read. And I knew I was going to spend a lot of the summer, last summer, in Marfa, Texas, and I wanted to get like a book for the summer. And I was so overwhelmed because I wanted to read everything. And I realized that I wanted to give myself an assignment of like required reading before I go anywhere else. I have to start with The Secret Teachings of All Ages, because I felt like if I read this Bible-sized book by Manly P. Hall, it's his best known work, that will be like the jumping off point for everything else that they have here. I need to start there, like a prerequisite, you know, like almost like the prereq to the rest of the books. Like I needed to read the big one. And so I told myself I would read it last summer, and I had 3 months to read it, and I finished it in February. So what is that? Definitely longer than 3 months.
Right.
June to February.
Yeah.
I finally finished it. And so I finished that in February. And now I'm just on this path of slowly getting to read every book in the bookstore. But I want to read some more of his stuff before I go, you know, to some of the other authors they have in there. But yeah, I'm reading this Secret History of America book. It's a little more dry, so I'm going slower with it. But I want to try to finish it before I go on tour in 2 weeks, because I'd like to go in there and get another book for tour.
I love this, because I've heard people who are like genre, like they like, you know, science fiction, something. Some people are author people. You're the first songwriter who's a bookstore person, who just like everything in a bookstore, not like everything by a certain writer. It's everything in the bookstore. Yeah. No fiction, pretty much nonfiction for you.
Lately, I can't even remember the last book of fiction I read, which saddens me because I love fiction and I actually find it really inspiring. Yeah. I'm just kind of overwhelmed by the number of nonfiction books that I want to read.
Yeah.
It's like this funny thing where I'm like having a hard time. There's so much on the list already, you know, but I have a good friend that always is reading two books. He's always reading one fiction and one nonfiction. So I'm like, maybe that should be me, like have two.
Someone told me that I was never like that. And now that is absolutely what I do.
Really?
Typically I do three. The problem is it takes three times as long to read everything. But yeah. I do fiction, nonfiction, and it's okay. So it's funny. It's never two fiction. It's going to be one fiction and usually two nonfiction. And the one nonfiction is typically going to be maybe something around music, you know, like a memoir.
Yes,
and then something that's maybe a little heavier in the nonfiction, you know, something that really is a little deeper, whereas the other, you know, the rock memoir is something you can kind of just read anywhere. But someone told me that, and I was never used to be like that. And what I love about that, or maybe one of the books will be poetry or essays or something, but I find that as I'm reading one and that the other one is still, I feel like it's somewhere in my mind, like in the, in the subconscious, it's kind of like shaken out in there and resolving itself. So that's so funny you said that, because someone told me that and I believe in that firmly.
That's cool.
So
yeah, I actually also have been thinking that maybe I should get a good nonfiction book for tour. I mean, sorry, fiction book for tour, because it can be so fun to be wrapped up in a story. You know what? The last fiction books that I loved were the Elena Ferrante novels. Absolutely adored those and devoured those.
Yeah.
And it's so fun. You get to just be in this world with these characters, you know? And I'm just a little overwhelmed by all the things I want to read at the Philosophical Research Society bookstore. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's overwhelming to have that. I know that list too, but it's funny. I'm not an author person because I feel like when I'm done with an author, I want another voice in my head. So I'm not the kind of person that says, let me get everything by that person. It's okay, I've read that book. I wanted to experience something else. But it's funny.
So what are you reading right now?
So I'm about to read the new, and I forgot the name of it, the new Jennifer Egan book. Okay. And I am reading, it's funny. So here's what I do, since you asked me. So I also subscribe to tons of magazines that just end up sitting somewhere if I'm reading a book. So I actually have dedicated myself to catching up on my New Yorker issues. And I subscribe to these literary journals that I just, like the Paris Review, that I don't get to because I'm reading books.
Totally.
So I have dedicated the past month or so to not reading books, but just catching up on all of those things because those are shorter form pieces and they're informative. And so that's exactly what I do. But
that's so nice. And it's so nice that you have them in print.
Well, okay. To be fair, the magazines I do, but I am totally a Kindle person when it comes to books. I like, you think someone like me, former English professor, I'm not wedded to the printed book at all. Like the whole thing about the feel and the smell, I don't get it at all. Not even a little bit. I'm absolutely a Kindle person just because I travel a lot too. And so it's easier to have everything and I can read on my phone or my Kindle or all that. But yeah, I'm not wedded to that at all. The magazines though, I still think that they're easier to read in print. So I do that. But yeah, I'm trying to think what else I've bought recently. But the Jennifer Egan one, I want to read. And then I think there's some nonfiction ones that I've bought, but again, I buy them and then there's just, I look at my Kindle and there's like 30 books I have to read.
I know, I have an overwhelming stack.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I'm exactly the person that they love.
Yeah.
You just buy all these books and then, it's like, when am I going to find time to read these?
Totally.
So, I guess, so last question, do you get inspired by other types of art? Art galleries tend to be a common source of inspiration for songwriters. So any other types of art inspire you?
Yes, movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, especially if like I see a film that kind of touches something in me that brings up similar feelings from similar experience or something, I can get really inspired because then it starts to feel like I'm writing a song about my experience, but I'm able to sort of make it like a story about these characters I saw in the movie, you know, and it helps me to write the song a little bit like less preciously because it's not only about me. Now it's sort of also about like the characters in the film.
Yeah. Is there a certain type of movie that you like?
I really like love stories, but not just happy ones. I like, dramatic films that show human relationships. Those are just the ones that really get me.
And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.